This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Governor Gretchen Whitmer's message last night may have been one of unity and bipartisanship, but her relationships with Republicans in the state legislature, especially during the pandemic, have been fraught. Here with a look at the governor's performance on the job from across the aisle is Ben Frederick. He's a Republican state representative from Owosso. Representative Frederick, welcome to Stateside.
I'm very glad to join you. Thank you.
Governor Whitmer seemed to be interested in striking a positive tone for 2021 in her speech. What did you think of how she focused it?
Well, obviously, I'm always appreciative of any mention of bipartisanship. I was honored to be mentioned for a second year in a row by the governor for work that we had done in a bipartisan nature. The proof will really be in the actions that are taken, because what we've seen from the administration, unfortunately, is that bipartisan is welcome on just their terms. And the most pressing issue before our state, COVID, and how we respond to COVID and the myriad challenges that have come from COVID, that has seemed to be an area that has had no interest in partnership as far as the governor is concerned.
The context in which she mentioned you was your work on the bipartisan Michigan Reconnect program. So for folks who hadn't heard of this before, it's tuition-free job training and community college for adults who are looking to get some post-secondary certification. Do you think that there are other issues where there's room for bipartisan work in the coming year, given how deeply divided things feel right now?
Well, I think there certainly is. I mean, I think, you know, again, under the construction of our state government, the laws are initiated and money is appropriated by the legislature. The laws are administered by the executive departments. They're interpreted by the courts. Anything we do in government has an expectation of, moving across the branches of government. So as we've looked in the past on things, whether it's workforce development, as Reconnect was a piece of, economic development, criminal justice reform, auto insurance reform, we've seen that we can tackle big issues in a bipartisan way, which is what makes it so frustrating to be in a situation of where there isn't that balance and where legislators like myself feel that we have a diminished voice on behalf of our constituents when it comes to the administration of our COVID response strategies, which do involve consideration of many, as I say, myriad policies and how those policies affect people who are hurting in a lot of ways across the state. There's certainly avenues for bipartisanship.
There's a bit of a classic conflict here between executive function and legislative oversight, but I'm just curious what you mean when you talk about, you know, the COVID rules and what's not happening.
Well, I think the best illustration I can give you is the conduct of the administration prior to April 30th, where we had some back and forth conversations on executive orders and so on. Back then, as I stated publicly, I was not averse to the idea of executive order administration, emergency authority, especially in those emerging weeks. And we were able to do certain things to influence order administration based upon the feedback of our constituents. It had some early successes with definitions, with some of the rules that were coming down, clarity on those things. When we started to reach an impasse where the governor was asserting in effect that she didn't need to have that ongoing dialogue, we saw all of that feedback and all of that interaction with the executive agencies cease. And at the time, I had 20 inquiries from my district in, including several from health partners like our local hospital system, public health, those that we would ask to administer these things looking for clarity. And their voices were diminished as a part of that process. So from a functional standpoint, there's a role for the legislature. Obviously, you can go into different policy disagreements on some of the things now, the lack of clarity on benchmarks for reestablishing hospitality, the need for further precise attention to things like remediation. Special education is particularly close to my heart, seeing some of the challenges that my own children have had as special needs students. So it's everywhere, and it's why people have an elected legislature, to interact with that executive, particularly 10 months into what has been declared a statewide emergency. I think we can start to see some of that collaboration, and it would make sense to have that collaboration.
Governor Whitmer proposed last night vaccinating 70% of the population that's over the age of 16 this year, and she's aiming at 50,000 vaccinations a day. There is the matter of whether or not that many doses are available from the makers, but will the legislature provide the funding that's needed to make that happen?
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to be getting vaccinated as soon as it's appropriate to do so. And we already had submitted $50 million for the practical administration of a vaccine funding. That first block of money has not been fully expended yet. And you'll see that certainly on the logistical side, keeping in mind that the actual purchase of vaccines and so on is handled by the federal government. We really moved toward the logistical apparatus for deployment in the state with state resources. But it won't be simply handed over. There's going to need to be some transparency on how these things are done. I've had very good feedback from my, again, local health partners, my local hospital system, as to some of the logistical challenges with forecasting inventories, the need for more transparency from the state agency, and so on. But obviously, I think it's a worthy goal, and it needs to be done, that we get that done. But there is a natural process of appropriations accountability with executive agencies, as you've had with any type of appropriations process.
Governor Whitmer also said she wants to spend $5.6 billion, most of it in the form of federal money, to help schools. We've heard the leadership saying that local control of those funds will be important. What does that mean for you? What are your concerns?
Well, in talking about bipartisanship, I think it's important to remember that we did pass a bipartisan school reengagement plan. And it spoke to local control. So it created a kind of unique circumstance where the governor has asserted executive order authority for many, many parts of the economy and life. But in this case of schools, the visioning was to be determined by the local districts. And I think that that needs to be honored as we move forward, that we continue to have the administration of education as a key community priority that is determined more by local prevailing conditions than by a statewide one-size-fits-all type of restriction. So moving ahead, yes, it's important that that funding is there for re-engagement, particularly remediation, as we look at what students, some of whom have been out of the classroom for 10 months, what that means for their development, and elevating education to a place of supremacy in our community priorities, which I believe is always going to have more practical energy being directed at the local level.
You mentioned that your own kids have some special education needs. Would you mind sharing some of your experience as a parent during the pandemic and what you've observed as schools have tried to adjust?
Yeah, we've had a tremendous blessing in our area with the strong ISD program for my daughter and a wonderfully administered program through a local district for my son, different parts of the autism spectrum. My wife is on sabbatical as a behavior analyst, a board-certified behavior analyst, so we had that additional opportunity for them to receive that type of therapeutic aid. But my wife is also not a teacher, and it became immediately apparent to us, as I know it is with so many parents, just absolutely reminding us the value of our educators and what they're doing for our kids. We have seen the challenges that particularly face special education delivery. There's been a valiant effort to try to translate as much as possible to the delivery online, but it's very tough, particularly with kids that have very short attention spans, to translate that information. My son's had difficulty, of course, you know, staying attentive to his instruction, getting frustrated. And we certainly can feel the stress on the part of our educational professionals. And we also, though, have all seen this desire to get in our area, to get the kids in person as much as possible, as quickly as possible, and understanding the social, emotional needs of these children. Now, in my own case, in particular with autism, the need to actually have that exchange, that social exchange, is so important for our kids, not for all kids, but particularly special needs kids, where they have to learn social language. They have to have that practical exchange with other students. And I definitely started to notice some behavioral spikes and different changes over the course of months with my son. And I think it puts a lot of burden on parents across our state, as they certainly want to see their children succeed. And they have stresses themselves as well. We had the ability to have my wife be home with them. I know that's a very difficult option, if an option at all for a lot of families.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is State Representative Ben Frederick of Owosso. We're talking a little bit about the governor's State of the State address and related issues in state government right now. You know, the governor called for unity last night. to this point, I guess in 2020 mostly, a great deal of messaging from Democrats in the legislature and in the administration has been about stopping the spread of COVID, stopping it from harming or killing even more people in Michigan. And a lot of Republican messaging has focused on the economic damage of the moment and making sure that we have a way to come back from this. What do you think the majority in the Michigan House has to offer toward reconciling those two goals?
Well, I think that there's acknowledgement that you obviously have to take COVID-19 seriously. I certainly do. And that it has to be something that is addressed and addressed aggressively and addressed smartly. At the same time, when the entire apparatus of the government is moving toward one particular goal, the silent victims are often not heard. We have to be practical about what types of risks we should assume in this environment and what type of risks are truly things that we should say, okay, this is too risky in this situation. There are certain things that to me and to many people in Michigan, I believe, are still worth having some of a risk assessment kind of calculation, like whether they see their loved ones at end of life or not. Is there a way to structure that safely? Is there true value in shutting down the economy by fiat and then declaring victory at some point and having nothing left to reopen? There has to be a practical reality of that. And the idea is, do we reach a point where we talk about what is truly safe and what is unsafe? And what decisions, what personal utility do people themselves in their own decision-making have in this equation? I don't like the idea of being told to be in a defensive crouch and staying home and waiting for further orders and instructions. I think we have to charge the people of Michigan with some personal responsibility to make assessments and make decisions as well. So there is a balance there. And I think that's the type of balance that is informing many of the legislature's proposals.
What has the new House Speaker, Jason Wentworth, been focusing on in the first couple of weeks?
Well, our initial first piece of legislation had to do with trying to restore trust in government, talking about practical needs for government transparency and government accountability, ethics reform, things that would allow that faith to be restored in government. And also, practically speaking, being attentive and responsive to what we're hearing from people that we represent and putting the legislature in a position where we really can be effective voices for that process. I think that that's a welcome message. I've come to know the speaker over the years, a very honorable man as a former veteran and just a very disciplined person and a very forthright person. And he has been seeking to engage and meet with the governor and find areas of common ground. And I know he's genuine in that.
You know, Governor Whitmer says that the Republican leadership has not been present at updates on metrics around COVID. Do you think that's something that Speaker Wentworth would consider?
Well, I know that it just isn't the case, frankly, because I've been invited to a number of these calls and I participated in a number of these data calls and metric calls. I was the author of the initial ongoing response proposal last fall that talked about restoring some degree of certainty and hope. And I was invited to some of the data calls, but you know, there wasn't that invitation wasn't extended for several months. And I was able to participate in a number of the calls, but you know, at the same time, you know, when you go into some of these processes, it takes two people to have a conversation. Now I can very well read a briefing after a call that tells me what is going to be decided. I'm more interested in having conversations that actually involve conversation. I'm not really interested in having conversations that are one-sided where a person just restating what's already been done or what's already been decided. And I think that's kind of the disconnect there. What the governor considers to be conversational or collaborative conversations, to me, are one way. And we do have members participating on those calls every week. So that's not accurate that that's not happening. But they haven't been of tremendous value from the aspect of, you know, building that relationship or any type of practical forum for providing input.
What are you hoping that Governor Whitmer will focus on with the legislature right now?
Well, in this case, for me, I think that the best thing that the governor could do is acknowledge the need for injecting some certainty and hope into this COVID response strategy, because anything that could actually define what we're looking at as success would take away a lot of the tension that's out there and a lot of the cynicism that's out there. People need to see the plan, and the plan needs to be better defined. And that's very much crystallized in things like the school athletic situation, where many other states have protocols for safely reengaging athletics. That comes to mind for the restaurant restrictions, which are very severe as they reopen, even as those restaurants have done a ton of stuff to be safe and so on. And then the overall reengagement strategy, which we've moved away from, the phased engagement strategy of the phases of, you know, fourth phase, five phase, sixth phase. You know, we've lost sight even of the governor's initial planning. So we're in this ether of this pause. And so if there is a desire to come together, there has to be an acknowledgement that certainty and hope is worth putting in some hard lines to say, this is what we're going to define as success. We're going to have these measures for public health benchmarks. And I understand that if things evolve further, you may have to change some of those things, but then we can have a conversation as a community. Right now, we've been governing by wait for the next announcement.
We should say that the governor has really no way to predict how many vaccine doses are going to be available at any given point. There's a fair amount of chaos at the level of where the doses have been coming from. And if the governor's in a situation where she can't say exactly how many doses each county is going to be getting, and she really can't force people to wear masks, how much of a plan and how much predictability can she provide?
Well, I think that the fact is, again, you're objecting for some personal responsibility in that. I was the mayor of my hometown during the recession and recovery years. And when you set a goal and you let people know why the goal is there, you actually start to see people responding and making choices. If we had a certain positivity level, we had a certain ICU capacity that was hardline, that these restrictions go into place. If our hospital capacity drops below this requirement, that affects behavior. And I don't think there's really ever been that trust level that personal utility has anything to account in these situations. It's been more, you know, by restriction, trusting the restrictions more than trusting a person's ability to look at it as a thinking adult and adapt behavior. That's really, I think, a difference in approach that's quite profound. I mean, that I have with the governor. I do have a level of trust in people's ability as thinking adults to respond to defined targets with, you know, the public health underpinning that. And I think that you would see a better result as well.
Ben Frederick represents the 85th District in Shiawassee County and some of Saginaw County, too. Representative Frederick, thank you for taking some time with us.
I very much appreciate it. Thank you.